Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Social Month. Love and Social Month. Very exciting category. And today we have a very special guest, someone I just love speaking to. Stefanos Sifandos is on the line. How you doing, Steph?
Good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. When you reached out, I got excited.
Awesome, man. I'd love to hear that. For the new listeners, can you tell a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, of course. So my name is Stefanos Sifandos, and I play and I delve in the realm of relationships and masculinity. So what that means and what that looks like in the real world is really helping people understand themselves in reference to what's important to them, whether that's an idea, whether that's their purpose, whether that's their relationships, their vocation, whatever really matters to them. Is I help people create a very healthy relationship to that thing, that idea, that person, that relationship. So there's greater substance and meaning that is built into that. And I really explore notions of masculinity and femininity and what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman, particularly in today's world. So they're really deep focuses that I have in my practice.
I love that. And it's really interesting the way you started that out, which is whenever something's important to someone.
Mm.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is if you take a look at the Maslow's hierarchy of needs and where we are, none of those things really mattered when we were starving and hunting and gathering.
Mm.
But now that everything is taken care of, that's where we need the most help. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's part of our evolution. That's part of our growth. And that's where we are at the moment as a collective. We are in the most peaceful times that we have experienced ever. Basically, we have access to so many resources. So our problems or our existential issues are more around how do we elevate consciousness and how do we elevate our ability to communicate and connect with each other, because we're seeing that that is actually laying a foundation for a more coherent, more accessible humanity.
Yeah, and that's fascinating because I think that they're one in the same. It's kind of like a lateral move, which is now that so much is taken care of, we're able to isolate. We weren't allowed to be isolated when we were essentially troop apes. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Very interesting stuff. Already going down good roads here. But let's talk about friendships specifically. You've got 3 steps to creating extraordinary friendships. But before we get into that, I want to talk about the importance here. Why are consciously selective, positively charged social relationships so crucial to living a fulfilled life and a happy life?
I think that, and certainly what I think, it's the research that I read from other amazing minds as well, and what I observe in the world, is that healthy relationships are laying a foundation for how we're behaving in the world as a greater collective.
Mm.
And so if we're looking at compartmentalizing, and also compartmentalizing our lives to some extent, the brain does that very well. But also if we're looking at our individual selves, then we're looking at our small family unit, then we're looking at our immediate peer groups or our primary peer groups, and we're looking at those peer groups feeding into a larger community, and that larger local community feeding into maybe a state, that state feeding into a country, the country feeding into the world, to the globe, into the earth, etc. It really begins with the relationships that we have in our intimate circles. First and foremost, it's our relationship to self. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But when we're talking directly to intimate relationships, whether that's familial intimate relationships, platonic or romantic, as 3 examples,
mm-hmm.
we have to understand that when there is coherence, when there is effectiveness and clarity and openness and transparency and vulnerability and honesty and sharing and mutual reverence and respect and trust, and when those relationships are sound and stable, we bring that sense of self and we bring it into our larger communities. And so we understand that the parts make up the whole. We understand that us as individuals, and when we're feeling connected and we're feeling seen and we're feeling loved and we actually experience that, we bring that sense of self into our environment, and that amplifies and magnetizes everything that we come into contact with. So you can imagine that if people are really feeling safe and held and connected in their relationships, they're bringing that to other people, that stranger that they're making contact with. And we're talking about that electromagnetic field, that resonance that is being felt by everyone. When our relationships are not set, and when we're in desperation, when we don't have a healthy frame of mind, and we don't feel, because we're social beings, we're relational beings, where we don't feel bonded, we feel that despair, we feel that desperation, we act from scarcity. And so something that's very important to also understand here is that whether we like it or not, parts, at least parts of our identity are formed through and with our immediate peer group. So if they're unstable and unhealthy, we will bring that sense of self into the world as well.
I never really put together what you said, which is so important, which is our personal relationships make up the society that we live in.
Yep.
It is literally that simple. It is that one-to-one of a ratio. Yep. One of my favorite podcasters always talks about, you know, national issues, whether it be the homeless crisis or the opioid crisis or all this stuff. And he's got this super simple, oversimplified, admittedly, theory and strategy, which is those who focus on family and education don't have this problem. Those who have the unit, I mean, it's not, this doesn't really provide solutions, but I've really bought into it recently, which is exactly what you're saying, which is if you have a stable group of family or even friends that make you feel loved and trusted and, you know, provide that very existential need of connection for the human, suddenly drugs aren't so tantalizing. That gang isn't so tantalizing. Violence isn't the first reaction. It really does work that way. But what you said, it really blew my mind, which is all of these individual friendships, essentially, you know, relationships of one kind or another, are what makes up society. And that's what determines whether society is a paranoid society or a violent society or a safe society or a loving society or a compassionate society. It's the sum of all those things. Very fascinating stuff. I love it, man.
Yeah.
Well, let's work on some strategies for creating some great friendships then. Talk to us about your three steps for creating extraordinary friends.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for me, I struggle with, my brother, I'll be so honest with you. I struggle when people say, give me one or give me three or give me five. They could say, give me 100 and I just want to give you 200. you want to give me three. I want to give you like 12.
That's great.
But I want to be really succinct here. So the first step is you've got to do the work on yourself. And in part of that is taking responsibility. So you've got to take responsibility and ownership of your stuff, your expression, your beingness in the world, the way you show up, the way you express, the way you think, the way you believe. And some people may say, well, I don't even know what I believe. Well, that's point in case. You need to really explore yourself. So the first part of all of this to creating extraordinary friendships is explore you, do the work on you, clear the stuff from the past that's hurting you. If you're extreme in behavior, really look at that, because the reality is that you will attract and you will magnetize what you are in the world. And if you don't know who you are, you'll continue to attract. If you have wounding and if you have pain, maybe you've been abused, physically or emotionally abused by a parent when you were younger, and you haven't really equilibrated or neutralized that pain, you haven't dealt with that in yourself, the coping strategies that you developed as a child around that are going to still be playing out in your adult world that don't necessarily serve you today. They don't necessarily really play a role or have a place. And so it's important and imperative to understand that when you get clear on who you are, when you get clear on how you think about life, when you get clear on what your highest values are, what your principles for living are, you then attract that in your life by noticing that with great clarity. And you really begin to understand what's important. That there, that's what's liberating.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. And Lifebook members have a little leg up in that category. So they're all nodding their heads emphatically.
Yeah, for sure. So you just got to do the work on yourself. You got to take responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm. That's step one.
Yes, that's step one. That lays the foundation for how we choose to behave in the world and relate, and also choose what type of people do we want in our lives. Instead of repeating patterns around, wow, I keep drawing a person in my life that is always jealous, or I keep drawing a person in my life that is always or consistently hurting me or cheating on me. Why is that happening?
Right.
It's not about blame and shame and fault and so forth. Absolutely, the other person needs to be responsible for their actions. But if you're seeing a pattern of bringing a certain type of person in your life,
what is it about me?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a good question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Very fascinating, man. And that's really great, because I've been kind of working on the most important thing in life for a long time. And after much, much deliberation, loving yourself, I find, is maybe number one. So I like that as a first step.
Yeah.
But please go on.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you're absolutely right. And part, that self-love is part of that. It's part of taking responsibility and working on you. You have to have a certain level of self-love and appreciation.
A certain level. Exactly, man.
Yeah.
Good word choice.
It has to be there.
Yes.
Yeah, it has to be a certain level of self-appreciation, self-love, and self-worth to spend the time and the energy and the resources to work on you, which gives me, which brings me to my second point. If you want extraordinary friendships, like anything in life, it requires time, it requires attention, it requires energy, it requires your mental, emotional, spiritual, physical resources. You've got, in one word, give. You've got to give in relationships. If you're not giving, you're not going to receive. And your relationships will feel empty. It really does begin with giving. And it's not giving to receive, it's giving to give. There's an, always going to be an element of receiving, always. That's just standard in our life. There's always going to be reciprocation in the world that we live in. This is physics per se. However, if we're not choosing to give, our relationships will feel empty. And I see this time and time and time again.
I love it. 100%. You got me on the edge. Hit me with number three.
Number three is compassion. We have to practice compassion and understanding empathy and compassion are all tied up in this. And so when we practice compassion, empathy, and understanding for the relationship itself, for ourselves and for the other person, we're able to forgive because we're humans. We're going to, you know, quote unquote, make mistakes. We're going to, quote unquote, mess up.
We have foibles, many of them.
We do have foibles, many of them. We're human beings and we're having an experience and we're, and if those of us that are wise enough to choose to learn and grow from our experiences, we're going to actually want to make, again, quote unquote, mistakes because that's how we're going to really grow deeply. We don't have to always mess up or make mistakes or hurt others to grow, not at all. And that is a powerful way to really break through stagnation. And so in relationship, your friend may hurt you. Your peer that you love so dearly may do something, not intentionally or with malice, that may hurt you. If you can exhibit compassion, empathy, and understanding in that space, you're not only serving your friend, you're actually serving yourself. Because forgiveness, the release of anger, or the movement through all of these extreme emotions or even these non-desirable emotions, yet they're very useful, they help us understand ourselves better. They give us a greater peace of mind. If you took 100 people, if you took 1 million people and you asked them, would you prefer to be consistently angry or consistently joyful? What do you think, what percentage of people are going to say angry or joyful?
Right, almost no one.
Yeah, correct. Now, here's the interesting thing. It's not because anger has nothing to teach us or doesn't serve us. It does. As I'm using anger as an example. However, it's a non-desirable state of being. It's a non-desirable emotional feeling and or feeling. There's still dispute on what anger is, whether it's an emotion or a feeling. And so understanding that helps us welcome these experiences and these feelings. So if your friend hurts you, instead of feeling hurt and taking it personally, instead of being so deeply offended, and this is where doing the inner work comes in, because when you do the inner work, you're able to see beyond the superficial. You're able to sit in that. And it's not about allowing someone to mistreat you, not at all. When I say accept and surrender to the experience or accept the experience or just breathe through it for a moment, pause, the power of pause, just pause for a few seconds, take a few breaths, really see beyond what's happening. And the only way you can really do that is when you've done enough work on yourself to have the confidence and the certainty to know that you don't have to be triggered by old feelings, that you just know that you don't have to be triggered by old pain points.
I love that.
Yeah, and then you can be really deeply compassionate. And you can save the relationship if that's what it requires. Or maybe that relationship has an expiry date, but at least you can exit with grace and at least you can exit with greater knowledge and wisdom of self. And you can have a growth experience as opposed to experiencing resentment, another non-desirable state, or consistent resentment where it becomes your mood, where it becomes your persona, where it becomes who you are.
Well, what's the alternative? I love getting in touch with the alternative. So like you said, you're either in a reactionary state and you're unaware, which is, you know, I do really feel for those people. I feel bad for those people who haven't really woken up yet to things like limiting beliefs and, you know, wired behavior and all these things you're talking about. If you're not one of those people, for instance, if you're a Lifebook member and you're aware of this sort of thing, you have two options. Well, you have a few options. You can either choose the gratitude and compassion route, right? Which is the desirable state, or you can indulge. You can indulge and go, I don't want to bring that. I want to wallow in my state. It's kind of enjoyable at times, which is strange.
Because it's familiar. It's because it's familiar. Oh. That's why it's enjoyable. It's safe. So the familiar feelings are safe feelings. And the prerogative of the brain and the ego self, the self that identifies with its environment, its prerogative is to remain safe. And so familiarity immediately equates to safety.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Never put that together. Another powerful point there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, what's the alternative? And when you get in touch with the alternative, usually you end up choosing the right path.
Yeah. So the alternative to choosing a desirable state or choosing compassion and empathy and understanding is to obviously not. And you mentioned this a moment ago about wallowing in one's grief or resentment or anger or rage or they did me wrong and you start hating it. Now, I actually suggest to people sometimes feel those feelings. Don't isolate them.
Let that out.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a process. Good point.
Absolutely. Don't suppress it. Feel it. Can you return to compassion? Because if you choose to hang on to that, you will become that. I always say forgiveness is an inside job. So if you don't choose to forgive, if you don't choose to release, if you don't choose to detach from what you're experiencing, the number one person you're hurting is you. You live with your feelings and your state and that tension, that neural tension and those stress hormones that are released through your body 24/7, 24/7. You live with that 24/7. No one else does. You do. And so holding on to that is painful and debilitating for you. Now, the outcome of that in terms of our social circles is we become very timid or we become hyper-aggressive. So we either withdraw from the world and we withhold our magic and our gifts because we're too scared to be hurt again. I'm generalizing here. Or we become hyper-aggressive and hyper-protective and defensive and we push people away because no one wants to be around someone like that. That's very difficult. Very difficult.
Right.
And so that's the alternative. And so the alternative essentially is having really poor relationships, really poor relationships.
And oftentimes not knowing why. This stuff is so tough. There's such a fine line between bottling your emotions and putting them down and growing from them or just getting on with it. That's a big strategy that I'm a fan of, usually with less important stuff. Is the stomping it away and just be like, you know what, man, get on with it. Keep working. By the end of the day, you'll forget about this crap. Well, that's a really fine line between if that thing is important, you just bottled up something really important. So this is kind of tough stuff. And I'm glad there's people out there like you working on this stuff.
Thank you, Jordan. Yeah. And there is the fine line. I think there's a point to make to this. This is actually really important is that there's something to be said for – so let me just briefly explain toughness and resilience because both these characteristics are required in any relationship. And life will stop. Toughness is our ability to move through difficulty, adversity, pain, and challenge. Resilience is our ability to recover from all that and keep going in life. And so there's something to be said for expressing and executing and holding toughness and resilience during difficult times.
Right.
The issue that we have as generally speaking, as a greater collective, is that we either not over tough or over resilient, but to the point where we forget that we need to deal with something and then it becomes suppressed. And so the toughness and the resilience becomes a badge of honor or a habit. Again, there are times in our lives, multiple times and many times, where we have to be tough and we have to be resilient and it pays to be that.
But maybe not hardened. Would you say the word is hardened?
There it is. There is, because over time, compounded, being tough and resilient over time, when it becomes an unconscious pattern, it hardens us. And so our default is to continually block out, ignore, and suppress anything that's difficult and get on with it, including the opportunity to grow through a situation.
Man, that is a really – and growing is the opposite of hardness. And you don't need to be hard to be tough and strong. I mean, Bruce Lee was like water, right? I've never really put this together. The hardness is what creates the shell. It's what makes you cold, right?
Yes.
Interesting stuff, man. I feel like we're getting to the bottom of it here. I love speaking with you.
Likewise, brother.
Let's talk supporting categories. Let's talk some lifebook lingo.
Yes.
What do you think is the best or most common or most effective or maybe your favorite supporting category for a healthy social life?
I would say, I've been giving this some thought in terms of, you know, just preparing for our interview and our conversation rather than an interview. And I just, because I've done Lifebook, I did it. I was very blessed to do it with John and Missy at their home, your home, their home in Chicago, which is, I don't know.
Woo-hoo.
Where are you living, by the way? Are you in Chicago still? Have you moved to?
Portland, Oregon. Loving it out here.
Oh, Oregon. Beautiful. Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. And we're closer to Hawaii, so it's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course. That's a beautiful thing. So I was thinking about this, and really for me, it's spirituality.
Wow.
Spiritual. If I had to choose a supporting category for social or, you know, the social category, I would choose spiritual. And I'm going to tell you why. Because for me, you know, people say, hey, are you spiritual? And honestly, what the fuck does that actually mean? when someone says you're spiritual, what does that mean? It can mean so many things. And so I often like to look at something, look at a definition of something, and get really clear on what does that mean for me and what can that mean for someone else that I'm asking. If I'm asking a question to someone, I want to be very clear with my intention and my definition of that. So for me, if I had to sum up spirituality in the most simple way possible, not to reduce spirituality because it can be quite complex and layered, it's about connectedness. So what's your connected practice? And that lays the foundation for let's explore what connectedness means. But when we just look at the word connectedness or connecting or connection, we're looking at, well, think about social. It's about connecting with people. It's about bonding. It's about binding. It's about learning. It's about growing together. It's about sharing. There's connectedness there. And so I think, and we come back to doing the work on yourself, taking ownership and self-responsibility for your own practices in life, for who you want to be and how you want to show up. There's a deep connection and a reverence to your own sovereignty. And I think that falls under the category of spirituality as well. And yes, religion can fall under the category of spirituality. A worship or a belief in a deity or something beyond us, an essence, the cosmos, something greater than us, that can fall under the category of spirituality. But essentially, it all links to connection. What are you connecting to? Are you connecting to a higher source?
Yes.
Are you connecting to your own sense of self? Are you connecting to your own intuition? Are you connecting to your own higher knowledge? And the more we do that, we bring that deeper sense of self into our relationships and we develop greater social cohesion. I think for me, spirituality is really going to really support social for sure. Of course, intellectual, emotional, character, that's definitely, and health and fitness is going to do that as well. Because when you're in integrity in your body, you feel better and you'll bring that feeling into your social circles as well. But if I had to choose spirituality.
Okay, so first of all, the answer surprises me. I thought you were going to go with something deep, but a little more superficial, like, hey, CrossFit really is a great way to meet people. but then what you said was incredible because, you know, when my dad and Nathaniel Brandon were putting together the Lifebook program, they worked out something called the fundamental pillars of spirituality. They're trying to get their mind around the spiritual category because they knew that different people of different religions were going to go through this process.
Yes.
Unlike other processes, they address and comply to all the religions. There is no other personal development process that I know of that is open in that way. So they had to think it down and they came up with the fundamental pillars of spirituality. And he's brought them up once or twice on the show. And I need to revisit it with him because they're effing incredible. And basically, if you take a look at all the major religions, they all have a couple things in common. There's like seven or eight of them. And a lot of them apply, I just realized, to your three steps of being, of loving yourself and compassion. So let me rattle off the ones I can remember. Most major religions are held up by some of the following facets. Being the best person you can be and improving yourself. Many of the religions stress that. Almost all of the religions stress that. Contribution of one form or another, which leads to self-worth. Connectedness with others on some level that is greater than what we see. These are all really, really common themes. And, you know, you're kind of echoing a lot of them. So that's ringing in my head right now. Really fascinating stuff.
Mm. Yeah, man, I'm feeling that.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You talked about stagnation earlier. I want to get some more strategies for Lifebook members who may be struggling. You know, what advice do you have for someone who's stagnant in a social relationship? Maybe they don't know whether or not they should continue their relationship. Maybe they're continually let down or hurt, like you said, or just some form of stagnation in the relationship or within themselves.
I would begin to diversify my experiences. Now, I could go a lot deeper, and then come back to when we're talking about stagnation, we're asking ourselves? What are our roles in the stagnation? How are we enabling this stagnation?
Internalizing, looking at yourself.
Internalizing, yeah. What needs to be done? In other words, action to take to make an illicit change and create transformation and change. And so I definitely support that. And in fact, that is a first port of call. It's really, again, it comes back to the self-responsibility and ownership, because why I say take responsibility, it's not to blame self or to relinquish any blame or necessity for action of another. But it does two things. One, it empowers us. It empowers us because we realize that we have the power to take action and create change and transformation in our lives. And secondly, what it does is it doesn't distance us from our relationship, but rather brings us closer. And it doesn't force someone else to take an action to make us feel better, which is essentially a codependent strategy. Mm. Because we can't control what others do or say or think. Even if we put a gun to someone's head and say, do this, we still can't control what they do. They still choose whether they say yes or no. Mm. And so why put all of our power and all of our hope, which is silly, into something that we cannot control and that we cannot, but we can control and master our own inner sanctum. And so that's why I come back to, you know, what role are we playing? And so after that, definitely diversify your experiences. In other words, something really, really simple. If you meet with friends at the same restaurant every week, go to a different restaurant. Mix up the environment. The environment is so important. If you talk about the same things day in and day out, there's nothing wrong with that. Bring in a new challenge of topic for discussion, whether it be quantum physics or whether it be talking about the existence of unicorns. It's irrelevant, right? But just start to diversify the way you connect, communicate, share, experience life together in that social setting.
Old environments, old habits, old conversation, old habits sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And again, there's nothing wrong with repetition. Repetition is fantastic. But if you're experiencing stagnation in the relationship, you need to ask why. And potentially there's a misalignment of values. Maybe you've outgrown each other, but you're not going to know that unless you explore it. And just because you've outgrown each other doesn't mean that you can't be friends. It just means that the dynamic and the nature of that friendship shifts. Mm-hmm. The way you interact in that friendship shifts. But again, to really understand and know that, you have to explore.
Love it, man. Let me throw a curveball at you here.
Yeah.
What do you think of those who choose lives of solace? Like, what do you think of fulfilling a happy life alone? Or let's kind of maybe expand that to those who choose to be single and have friends but don't ever choose a spouse. Do you think it's possible to live a fully fulfilled life? Do you think it's harder or just different? What do you think of that? I mean, think about this, right? I was talking to one of my friends recently who said, man, you know, I got a vasectomy when I was younger and chose to never have kids. You did it right. You know, you had the family, you stuck with the wife, you had the kid. And I was like, man, there is no right answer. Think about this. What about the Buddhist monk who's achieved enlightenment in the temple, right? I could look at him and say the same thing. So I think they're all different, but maybe some are harder, or I don't know. You tell me. What about living in solace of some kind? Solitude.
It's a great question, Brian. This is something I explore existentially and philosophically within myself and in my circles of friends as well. We discuss topics like this and with my beloved as well. I mean, I go anywhere and everywhere when it comes to understanding life. Let me preface this first. So we're relational beings. We're social beings. I think that's a given. We've evolved that way. And so to label not choosing to be in partnership as right or wrong is difficult to do. And that judgment, I think, for me personally, is too harsh. What I will say is this, though, is that we do generally function better when we have a support network of other people with us.
Mm-hmm.
We function more effectively. Even the monks that live in solitude have some level of connection or relationship.
Right. Yeah. They even are not forced, but it's part of their practice to go back into town occasionally just to get some human connection.
Yeah. And they also recognize the connection to earth or to spirit or to cosmos or to something.
Good point.
So we're relational beings.
Yeah.
We're in solace and we're not at the same time. And so there's a lot of gray area there. with respect to someone that chooses to be alone, or even a hermit, someone that's a hermit, or someone that doesn't want to be in relationship, or has friends but doesn't want to be in an intimate romantic partnership, there's a lot going on there, man. I mean, to debunk that just at a psychoanalytical level, at a psychosocial level, I would ask this question, very simple question: why? Why do you choose to be alone? And don't just say because I want to. Why? Is it because amazing deep exploration where you've meditated 4 hours every day for 20 or 30 years, and what's come to you in that meditation is that you need to walk this path alone and you're very comfortable with that and you come from a very healthy emotional and psychological place? Or are you choosing to not be in relationship because you've been hurt multiple times, you've been cheated on, you've been experienced dishonesty in your relationship, and you're too scared to go there? So the why is very important.
Yeah, very different.
And so the first, very different. I mean, and I just gave you two examples then, right? But they're very, they're also, I mean, the latter is a more common example, but they're very real examples.
And a million in between. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. So the why is important. Why are you choosing to be in solace? Why are you choosing to isolate yourself? Why are you choosing to not give and receive love and affection and care and intimacy and challenge and growth and depth at that level? Why? Just ask why. That's all that. That's all that's important at this point, and then we can go from there. But they're complex. The human beings are not complicated. We're complex. There's many layers and functioning to us, and so there's so many variables that influence that. That question of, hey, if you're living in solace and you're choosing to live in solitude, are you unhealthy? Yes and no and. It really depends. And so why? Why is the number one question? We have to ask that, but we have to then be prepared to be really honest with ourselves. And most people, the truth is most people lie to themselves. And the truth is most people are not honest with themselves.
Wow.
And I was like that for so, so much of my life. And that's why I experienced the hardships and the pains and the challenges and the rock bottoms that I experienced, because I was living a life of lies and I wasn't choosing to look at myself fully.
So you, in principle, yes, possible. In reality, oftentimes not healthy. More importantly, the question is why.
Completely resonate with what you said. If I had to make a hard statement on it, I would say being isolated and choosing to be isolated for lengthened periods of time, and I'll be very clear on that, for lengthened periods of time is an unhealthy practice. So if someone can't stand being in social settings, doesn't want to be with people, doesn't want to experience love, doesn't want to experience closeness, I would say largely that's an unhealthy practice. Someone that wants to disappear for a year, a few months, 2 years, whatever, I mean, you put a time frame on it, but to learn about who they are from a particular vantage point, I absolutely support that. I do that. I disappear in the wilderness, in nature. I spend time on my own. I think that's imperative for every human being to do. And the balance point comes from two places. It comes from feedback from your environment. Are your peers and people are going to have their own agendas and their prerogatives, but is your social environment letting you know that, hey, man, you're moving in extremes right now, and also what you come from? And so if you're not balanced in that perspective of how much time you spend on your own and how much time you spend with people, intimate time with people, you're going to feel the pinch of that in some way, shape, or form.
Very, very insightful stuff, man. I love it. Before we wrap it up here, what's the number one attribute that you look for when you are looking for a lifelong friend?
Willingness. The same attribute I look for in any human being when it comes to us being intimate together. And I don't just define intimacy by sexual intimacy or romantic intimacy. I'm talking about spending time together. Are you willing to look at your stuff? Are you willing to go down the hard road with me? Are you willing to celebrate with me? Are you willing to love and laugh and be joyful with me? Are you willing to express yourself? Are you willing to be whole in your being? Are you willing to be challenged? Are you willing to grow? Are you willing to learn? Are you willing to listen to me and know my values? And of course, that's reciprocated, needs to be. So whatever I'm asking them to be or requesting of them, I request that of myself. So for me, willingness is a foundation and it's a pivotal pillar in any healthy dynamic of relationship, no matter what level of intimacy you're experiencing. Willingness is the shit. Willingness is everything.
Okay, man. The wheels are turning here, because something I've been really fascinated with is what I was labeling engagement. Now, I'm going to sound kind of cynical here. I'm going to sound judgmental here, but I'm going to express myself a little bit. And I think that the Lifebook members will connect with this a little bit because they often feel like aliens because of their personal development desires. So I've been thinking about this thing called engagement because so many of my peers, man, they're just checked out. They're flat. They're zeros. You literally just like, I'm just going to order food to my door and play Xbox all day. And it's like no aspiration. You ask them what they want to do. They don't even really have an answer. I feel like back in the day, you would have like grandiose expectations that you would never achieve. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now you ask these people, what do they want to do? And they don't even know. Like, oh, I don't know. Like whatever, man. Like I got something set up. I mean, there is so much disengagement. There's so much checked outness that I find myself almost exclusively hanging out with way older people than myself. Yeah. Because I cannot connect with the vast majority of my peers. I'm worried that it's a bit of an epidemic. And this is still the cynical side of me talking. I don't know how to cure it. And it's pissing me off. I don't know. I don't think it's the majority, but I'm not sure if it's the majority. I don't think it really matters. But there is me expressing myself a little bit with my frustration of so much checked outness. But I think it's not necessarily engagement because you can be engaged but not really willing. Willingness is a very, very poignant word choice. Mm. And I think you really hit the nail on the head.
Brother, I'm going to say this, and I don't think you're being judgmental. I think you're compartmentalizing, categorizing, and you're understanding your environment. And if you're massively emotionally charged, sure, there's a judgment there, and you just move through that. That's fine, whatever. It doesn't really matter. Not in context of this conversation. But right now, I would say, man, if you're really noticing that in your environment with certain peer groups, you're going to have to make some tough decisions around, do their values really align with my highest values?
100%.
And what's the commonality that we can share? There's nothing wrong with difference. Difference is beautiful. We need to celebrate difference and we need to celebrate sameness. The issue is that if you're really struggling with connecting to them at a deeper level that's meaningful and of substance to you, then you may have to make some decisions with respect to how much time you're spending with them, how much energy input, how much effort you're putting into that relationship. 100%. Effort's a big one, man. See how I just did that? I snuck in. When you asked me three strategies, I just snuck another one in. See how I did that? I said, number four, effort. I'm owning it. Number four, effort. You got to put the effort in. You got to put the effort in.
And then also realize that everybody is, in fact, different. Yeah. I know you got a heart out in a few minutes, and I want to make sure to talk about all your projects and stuff, but everybody is different, and my demands as a friend, my standards as a friend are pretty high.
Yeah.
I'm not just looking for one level above disengaged, which is, average level of engagement. I am, as many Lifebookers are, looking for, in the majority of my relationship, conscious people who are looking to improve themselves, improve the world, and help drive me forward as I help drive them forward. That's a pretty tall order, and maybe not everybody is down with that program. So I would at least like to get to a baseline, because I can hang with baseline guy, and talk NFL.
Yep.
But I do have very high demands, and I recognize that about myself. So I think a lot of Lifebookers do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about, what are you working on, man? Give out your Instagram. I'm sure so many Lifebookers loved this interview, man. I have to say, this is such a strong interview. So please give some way for the listeners to follow up on your strategies and your projects and you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that opportunity, brother. So definitely you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Stephanos Sefandos, and my website, stephanossefandos.com. I'm sure you put in the show notes, but I'll spell it quickly. Stephanossefandos. It's a bit of a tongue twister if you're not accustomed to the European Greek there, but Stephanos Sefandos. And I'm working at the moment, working on so many amazing projects, brother. Like, I just feel so blessed at the moment. Something that's really prominent right now that launches in, 8 days. Realize it was that close, 17th of July, Reclaim Your Kingdom. And it's an 8-week online immersive men's journey, men's program. We speak to confidence. We speak to relationships. We speak to purpose. We speak to drive. We speak to sexuality. We speak to so many areas of life. We speak to the emotional self and creating emotional stability in oneself. We speak to masculinity massively, and we unpack all of that health, fitness, vitality, the age of contemporary man, and so much more. And that's a really powerful program. That's called Reclaim Your Kingdom, and you can check that out at reclaimyourkingdom.com.
Steph, this was a pleasure, man. I would love to have you back on again. Please let me know how I can return the favor. I'd love to help you out, man.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. You, whenever you want me on, you just reach out. I love jamming with you, Jordan. I really do, brother. and I always make it happen.
Cool, man. You're the best. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
This is Steph. See how I did that? That is how I do it. And Jordan River signing off, saying thank you so much for listening. Love you, Lifebook members. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.